This is the Quest Church Podcast, a space to deepen our formation, our practices, and our community as we live our mission to love people wholeheartedly, love God boldly, and make disciples faithfully. Quest Church is a Jesus-centered, multi-ethnic, LGBTQ+ affirming and justice-engaged community in Seattle. As we journey in the podcast together, our hope is that we would continue in our quest to become a community of disciples of Jesus who leave a multiplying impact for the flourishing of our community, our city, and our world. My name is Brandy Miller, and I'll be hosting this podcast. In this episode, I am joined by Director of Community Life and The Bridge, Chloe Guillo, to talk about justice and compassion as formation. Throughout our conversation, which is an extension of our exploration together of faith and race, we discuss the ways that the Bible invites us not just to justice or compassion, but to the marriage of both. For many of us, there is a distinction between justice and compassion, which really becomes the distinction between caring and actually doing something when Scripture calls us to both. So I hope that in this conversation, you would find your own formational journey and space to express more deeply what it means to love God and to love others. I am really grateful to have you on the podcast today as we continue our series on thinking about what it means to be at home with God, self, and others, and its intersection with our formation. And you're pretty new around here. You're not new around here, but you're new in the staff space. And so I want folks to get to know you both in who you are as a person, but also what it means that you're doing the particular role that you're doing. So can you give me a little bit of a sense of your spiritual background and how that's come to intersect with Quest?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I am like 1 month right now into kind of stepping into the staff role at Quest, but the church space is nothing that's new to me. I grew up a pastor's kid, basically, but because it was my mom, she was a director for most of her life. I grew up in church. I was the kid that was like running around and just getting into trouble and stealing all the snacks from the Sunday school rooms. But my faith has always been important to me because of that. I grew up in a four-square Pentecostal church in Salina, Kansas. So it was very white evangelical, very like mid-sized town. And yet it was complicated because it was also a space that I really did experience like belonging and love and community. And that was what made church church to me. Again, just being so deeply ingrained in church in every part of my life. Like I didn't go to daycare. I hated daycare. And so I was there every afternoon after school, every day in the summer. Those were the people that I saw the most, and they did love me. And so church was always about love for me, and so I think that's how I experienced God, too, was about love. And then I got older, and it was a little more the, like, head knowledge. I always joke that my dad had me doing, like, exegesis papers at 12. Like, he would give me a passage, and I had to write 3 pages on it. And so then I kind of started doing more of the looking into God that way and actually reading the Bible and not just listening to Adventures in Odyssey or watching VeggieTales, which is the primary way I experienced God at that point. And so grew up in the same church my whole life. When I turned like 15 or 16 and started being more aware of the world around me, and that was also during 2016 election and all of that, that's when the jadedness started to sink in, and it was really hard for me to separate God from the people of God. And so even though I had experienced so much love and belonging up until that point, it was like the veil was torn off, and then suddenly I saw more of, oh, what do you mean that you are going to support this person that stands for everything, that stands against everything that I am and believe? And so then church became a little more complicated.
Yeah.
And I really struggled through like the end of high school, but I happened to end up stumbling into going to a Christian college in Seattle, even though I didn't want to go to a Christian college. But God has a funny way of doing things sometimes. And that was kind of a moment that was really, I feel like, turned the tables in my faith of just coming to Seattle, going to a college where I was able to experience different expressions of God, and at the same time starting to go to Quest in 2018 was kind of just revived my faith. And I saw this more justice-leaning faith that echoed who I am, because I've always been passionate about justice, always been passionate about social justice. I just never saw that as connected to God until I came here. And then I was like, oh, that's why I care so much, because that's what God cares about too. And so over these last 6 years, just continuing to grow in my faith, tangible expressions of justice. And that's what I studied in school, is cultural studies and social justice alongside theology. And so it's been very much about kind of those ties for me. And so now I'm at Quest doing this like hybrid role of community life and also the bridge ministry and kind of our local engagement in the way that we show our justice in the community, which is could not be the more perfect fit for just me and how I've experienced God in church, because it's always been about community and it's always been about justice. And so that's why I'm excited to be here, because it just kind of lines up with who I am. And so, yeah.
Well, there's some things that I love in that I think a lot of Questers would probably also resonate with, which are like, even in your younger experience, it felt like when Jesus people did Jesus-y stuff, were loving and present, and in your day-to-day life and doing life together, there was this communal aspect that brought you closer to a sense of God's love. And when those people, those same people, chose a socially unjust way of being over the way of Jesus, it pulled you farther away from the community, which I think affects how we interact with mm-hmm. God. And so I think many of us who are in church in this season of our lives are trying to figure out, how do I love God when I can't trust God's people? How do I love God when the way I've loved God before has been so connected to community? And I think that's how it's meant to be. And so I even hear in your story some of that, and the distinction of being at the school that you went to and having these experiences of justice being something that was awakened in you, but also really familiar to you. I hear you saying there's like this innate thing that you recognize as being in you because it is of God. And so it's interesting that you're finding God in yourself in the context of community and alongside just like kind of the general ways that it seems like Jesus was interacting with you in your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And that was like such a like a wake-up call for me of, because we talk about religious trauma in different ways and like church trauma, and I was like, I never, my pain didn't come from, oh, I believed God was this like bad, like all like all these oppressive things, because I don't, that just didn't resonate with me. Mm-hmm. And because I watched people more than I listened to them, and so I watched this like loving God and I watched this like love for people. And so that is who I internalized God to be. I didn't really internalize like the homophobia and the racism thing. It just didn't work. It was around me, but I don't know. Somehow I managed to avoid that. And I give a lot of credit that to my mom, especially. Mm. And she was always the person that was like, Chloe, you cannot confuse God with the people of God. Mm-hmm. And that was one of her like recurring things that she has always said to me throughout my life. And so now to see kind of that alignment, I still do see God in people, and that's complicated, but yeah.
And that's one of the challenging things I think about spirituality and formation in general, is that because God is invisible, we're always seeking out these, right? It's like this very Romans kind of, you know, the intangible or invisible things of God are made known through the world. And I'm like, that includes people. And it's challenging when we're only given particular models of what it means to be faithful, that we then extrapolate those people into our view of God. And so I think about how many of us have or have had at some point in our life a view of God that is like a big white man with a beard up in clouds with like little cherubs around gates of heaven. And I'm like, oh, we're just creating equivalencies the best that we can. But when those equivalencies suddenly become unjust or painful or exclusive or limit belonging, we end up with this question of justice and compassion as an act of formation, and saying, what does it look like when we lean back into ideas of justice and compassion to rework our view of God so that we can have a broader image, mm-hmm. right? That I can imagine God as Black woman, or that I can imagine God as Asian man, or I can imagine God, and not in the like, God is literally those things, but then in God is all encompassing of the people that are made in God's own image. And so I think there's ways that that broader exploration is really challenging with what you're describing, which is like that we create equivalencies based on the closest things to us. Mm-hmm. In lots of places, that's called indoctrination.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be so dependent on like the communities that you're in too. The people. I mean, I just think as human nature, like I feel that I can't help but see the people around me, and I'm going to equate that to something.
Yes.
And like you said, if God is this intangible thing, but God created all of us, then there is this part of that you are told that you see parts of God in every person. So if you grow up in a community that's so exclusionary and isolated, that your view of God becomes so exclusionary and isolated narrow. And so it's so important for us to broaden our communities in whatever way. For me, that meant leaving Kansas and moving to Seattle. But not everybody's able to do that. And so I'm always trying to think of ways that people can continue to expand their communities.
Yes. Well, one of the things that Dr. Brian says often is that, like, we're being drawn into God's own life. And one of the things I've been thinking about in that lately is that that includes all of us. If we are made in the image of God, or if God has already created us, we are already included in whatever God considers God's self to be. And that is this confusing and esoteric thing, but I think it helps me on the compassion side. I'll have you do some definitions for us in a minute. But in thinking it more empathetically and thoughtfully about how the image of God in me meets the image of God in another person and reveals more of God's self to me. And so being in isolated or insular communities creates a context in which we only get one image of God that then primes us toward injustice. Because if I can only see God in one way, then I will create absolutes and objectivity around things that God never intended to, without actually expanding my view of what can be and what is.
Yeah, I heard somebody once trying to, in a controversial way, was like, you were not made in the image of God. And to say that you as an individual do not reflect all that God is. Like, when it says that you are, mankind is made in the image of God, it means that it takes all of us. Mm-hmm. And so to think that we can only see God through, our individual expressions or even people that only reflect our identities, that's not what this beautiful, diverse creation was meant for us to engage with. And so I think that idea that it takes all of humankind in order to see the image of God.
Yes. And so let's talk a little bit more about some of that, because what we're talking about today a little bit is justice and compassion as formation. And I hear that in your story, which is right, that as you discover more of the justice and compassion of God, the more that you are drawn yourself into that Dr. Brian language of God's own life. But for folks who don't really know how to, because I think we can be like justice, empathy, compassion, reconciliation, all of these things. When we talk about justice and compassion, what are we talking about?
Yeah. So, I think everybody's going to choose to see these terms in little different ways, or there can be nuances, as there always is. But for me, I there was an illustration as I was kind of looking into a couple weeks ago of trying to figure out what is that makes justice and compassion, because they're interlinked and they're necessary together. Yes. But there is also something that makes them different. And it was this illustration of, let's say that you're in a boat on a river, and there's these people that are drowning, and you keep pulling them into your boat to save them. And that's compassion. It is the responding to the crisis that is in front of you, and that is necessary. Justice, in the way that this illustration puts it, is going, if you go down the river and you see that there's somebody throwing those people into the river, that's the source of the problem that is causing the need for this compassion to happen. Mm-hmm. That's the source of the issue. And so justice is getting to the source of what is causing these injustices to happen. What is causing these things to happen that we have to react to? Well, compassion is doing what we can to mitigate the harm.
Right.
And so we need both, because injustices are present. That's going to be, that's part of what it means to be on earth and to live in this tension of the now and the not yet. But what does it look like to hold that we are in these spaces where we exhibit compassion, we respond to the things in front of us, kind of this reactive thing, versus also the proactive of getting to the root of the problem, the source of the systemic injustice that is happening? And so for me, that's how kind of think of justice and compassion and how we balance them and why they're both necessary.
Yes. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And one thing I think I would add to that on the compassion side is that compassion typically requires empathy and the ability to suffer with, to be alongside, and to, it's not just providing a service to meet an immediate need. It's allowing ourselves to be moved to compassion, right? There's that language in Mark, I think it's Mark 1 or 2, where a man who has leprosy comes to Jesus, and it says that Jesus was moved with pity and asked the person, what do you want me to do for you? And he's, if you would do it, you can make me clean. And Jesus' response is, I will be clean. And so there's this two-part approach to compassion that is maybe even three. It is seeing and being present. It is being moved by the suffering or the injustice that's happening in front of you, and then being moved to act somehow. And those things are really, really good. And they aren't enough to deal with what you're saying, like the long-term upstream issues of injustice. And so I'm always interested in the ways that Jesus encounters those things and ties that directly to how he's revealing who God is in the world, which is like this God who sees, which, right, is an ancient Jewish depiction of God. It is this God who has compassion, which is this like Isaiah image of Jesus and being like the, like God being wings over people, holding them and holding safe space for them or wanting them to be able to come back to themselves. And there's this acting toward the immediate well-being and the long-term well-being of the people. Mm-hmm. How have you come to know justice and compassion as a part of your own formation and spirituality or connection to Creator? Specifically because I think that in a lot of spaces, that, so let's just say, let's go with TikTok activism. That is justice with no compassion. Mm-hmm. It is strategy that maybe is birthed out of love somehow, but somehow loses that love in the activism. And then there's these spaces that are compassion where it's like thoughts and prayers. And so when we have these two extremes of Christians who are often like, oh, thoughts and prayers, or we'll pray for you, but don't do anything, but are like moved emotionally by something, but to no end. And there's folks who are moved constantly, but don't have a real sense of the human complexity of a situation. How do we find Creator or God in that, or maintain any kind of semblance of spirituality when it's the landscape of justice and compassion is so chaotic?
Yeah. I think that compassion is something that we is ingrained in us as Christians, or should be ingrained in us as Christians, because of that empathy part of, you know, God so cared for the world. And that's kind of this phrase that we repeat in our minds. And so thinking of growing up in a church that served dinners every Saturday night to people who were experiencing low income or economic crisis or clothing drives and things like that, of things that made tangible differences in people's lives. And that was important. But then there's like this, and yet some of the frustration that I feel like I experience, or people who kind of start to become jaded with religious systems experience, is that once you start questioning, like, okay, so what is causing these people to have an economic crisis? Why can't they get food? Why can't they get clothing? Then it becomes, oh, well, you're a socialist, yes, or you're a communist. And like that is then becomes a critique. And so that was kind of the point of then, it's, which is, goes back to this idea of seeing people act one way and then hearing one thing of, I'm like, which is why I get stuck with churches. I'm like, I see you guys doing justice work. You might not call it that, but what you're doing is important work of caring for people that are experiencing injustice from society. Mm-hmm. And if we can just bridge that gap of you seeing, we're going to continue to do these dinners or these clothing drives, we're going to continue to do this, and we're going to ask, oh, why is this happening? We're going to go to our representatives and advocate for policies that help people. If we can just make that jump, then the church becomes a whole lot of a more activated and justice and compassion centered place. And so I think that for me, part of the question just came from asking, how come I can see you guys giving, like literally sometimes giving the shirt off of your back for your neighbor, but when it comes time to vote for a policy that would help them, it's like you can't make that connection.
Yes.
And so that's the need to like bridge that justice and compassion of that empathy proceed, that empathy drives you to act in other ways. Where I do sometimes activism that happens in non-sacred spaces or outside the church can be devoid of that seeing people of who humans are, and you get so caught up in the systems that you forget about the people who are, it's really impacting. Yeah. And I feel like I see that sometimes as somebody who's way too addicted to social media and watches a lot of tweets or TikToks or whatever. And it just sometimes is, well, where's the actual human being in this?
Right.
And as Christians, something that we do hold is that care for the human being, or we should hold. In theory, our theology necessitates that. And so it's like this space that churches have and Christians have. And when I say the church, I don't mean like the building of church. I mean the collective whole of Christians and our, like the we're two or more gathered idea.
Right.
That we, our theology necessitates this deep care for the human, that we are to love God and love our neighbor, and that those aren't separated. Those are together in the greatest commandment. And God talks about justice in this systemic way. Like continually talking about, I love the profits. Like, this economic system is exploitative. Mm-hmm. And we see that alongside care for the widow and the neighbor. Like, we see both. And so how can we bring those together more is the question that drives me.
Yes. Which makes a lot of sense. And I think it offers us a window to what God is like. Because if we have this God who is consistently throughout the text saying, there needs to be both. There needs to be systemic renewal, right? We can see this in Jubilee. We can see this in the prophets. Like, we can see this in how God holds people and nations in particular, more than individuals even, accountable for what they do. And we see this continual call for, you know, the major prophets. You have Elijah going to a widow and spending a bunch of time with her. Mm-hmm. And then you have him speaking back to the systems and to the leaders of the time. And I think it reveals to me this picture of a God who isn't content to do just the individual or just the communal. And I think what happens oftentimes in justice spaces is we are like, the individual is insufficient. And it is. Mm-hmm. Therefore, we are only communal now. And so when individuals are struggling, we don't know what to do. Or we go only as far as mutual aid, but don't let ourselves actually tie our lives to one another. And I think it's a space where it's not exclusive to Christianity or religion at all, but I think we have a leg up to be able to form the kind of communities that could do really good justice work. And I'm hearing also in some of what you're saying about this intersection of justice and compassion in church that's really hard. This space where once the personal becomes the political, we often lose that in our religious spaces, or we somehow disconnect our hearts from that as though God doesn't care about the political. Mm-hmm. But the personal is the political, because the political is what happens to human bodies, to the spaces that humans occupy, to the land itself. And so I think there has to be this recapturing of the idea of politics as a form of social good rather than of social control, which is what we're seeing in a lot of the spaces that we're in. And it makes sense to me that people would want to disconnect that from God or recreate the kind of tyrannical image of God that they've been taught to follow in order to do what they see as justice. And so I think we have a challenging internal formational gap of saying, how do I unlearn God as tyrannical, dictator? I'll even use the word fascist because we have so many examples of it in our culture right now. And instead say, no, this God is co-suffering, is compassionate, is organizing a group of people toward the common good, which we see even in the Acts church, right? I think it's a cliche example, but I love that Jesus doesn't tell them what to do when Jesus leaves. And the thing that they intuit out of living alongside Jesus is they are to create communities and systems of well-being and justice and togetherness. And that's a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, the way that we get caught up on these words, political and personal, is so interesting to me. Of even when you talk about social justice, and people are like, no, biblical justice. You could separate the two. Like, when you actually read in the Bible, and you're like, those are the same thing. We're talking about social when we talk about God. One of my favorite stories in the Old Testament that I've learned in like the last year, which is buried in Numbers, is the story of Zelophehad's daughters. And I don't think I'm saying that correctly. But this story where, you know, there's these five daughters of this man their father passes away and they can't inherit the land under Jewish law at the time. And so they go to Moses and they're like, hey, we should be able to inherit this land. Like, this is an injustice that is being done to us. And where I think that we think of this tyrannical God that is so tied to these rules of the society is where we'd imagine the story ends with God being like, how dare you question me? And instead, God is, this is unjust. And what needs, he tells Moses, or God tells Moses, what they say is correct. And here is what should be done in order to remedy this situation. And so I love that story because it just shows how it's these individuals, the story that happens to these individual women and what they experience because they aren't able to inherit the land that should go to them. But God takes that and creates this broad change for society. Mm-hmm. And so then it goes from just remedying what happened to these individuals into then so this never happens again. Right. But even within that story, it's complicated. It's complicated because it actually doesn't happen. Moses never follows through with what God says to do. And so even within that, you see humans are complicated in that we don't always listen or we don't always actually follow what God is putting on our hearts. But I love that, like, in that story, and it kind of, like, goes through, like, Joshua, and that they, like, keep pressing. Yeah. And eventually, like, Joshua does give them the land that they have inherited. But I just think it's like a story of how social transformation happens in the Bible and also how it happens mm-hmm. for us, is that there are going to be injustices in our society that we come and we question. And it's not to say, like, how dare you question it, or, you know, to say God doesn't care about what, you know, if you inherit land, like mm-hmm. that's political. That's not, right. there's nothing to do with you. But that God hears us and says, you're right. And what needs to change in order for yes. this to be remedied?
Yes. And that in that too, there's, we have this example of an individual being affected by a system coming, and that's a place that God responds. Then I think about in, what is it, Acts later on, after they've been doing this thing for a while, a community comes saying, the Greek folks are being overlooked in the giving out of food. There's a community that is going hungry in this so-called Christian Christ community. And that group of people coming to the disciples and saying, hey, this isn't right, causes them to move. So you have individuals coming for their own well-being. You have people coming on behalf of other people. And then you have things like the prophets where, I don't know, I think about the book of Amos a lot, where Amos is like a giant butt-kicking. It's the book starts out in the first couple of chapters with God critiquing, going around and critiquing and giving judgments to all of these surrounding nations of Israel for their warmongering practices, for the ways that they destroy the farming lands of people around them, for the ways that they think about pregnancy and women and community and food and all of those things. And I would imagine that the people reading at the time would be like, yeah, get them, exactly. God, you got them. And then for the next five chapters, it's God being like, oh no, this is about you.
Yeah.
It says like, it literally, the language is literally in the text is like, the Lord is prowling like a lion. Mm-hmm. And so you just imagine this like circle of judgment honing in on God's people and saying, no, the injustice lives and exists in you. And if you are to know me, you have to deal with this. So it is ironic and necessary that we engage with, it's ironic that we often engage with very flatly this idea of do justice, love mercy, walk humbly, because that's the context that it comes out of is, mm-hmm. is Amos saying, it's not a proactive positive, it's a reactive call to say, y'all aren't doing this stuff. Mm-hmm. This isn't applause because you are doing it. It's not a thing that you put over your kitchen, you know, over your kitchen to virtue signal in some way. It's this thing that God is saying, to survive as a community, for my blessing, for my love to reach you in the ways that I want it to reach you, you got to do justice and love mercy and walk humbly. And that's something you have to shift and do, which somehow hits that weird, like, murky place between justice and compassion where as we do the stuff, we're changed. And as we experience justice ourselves, we're changed. And all of those feel like they move in this big circle of healing that allows us to know the God that cares for our basic well-being.
Mm-hmm. And that's why the walk humbly is in that, because you have to have humility in order to understand that you are also changed in that process. Mm-hmm. And so while sometimes it feels like, oh, do justice, love mercy, got it, what does walk humbly have to do within that?
Right.
Because we do have to open our hearts, which also goes to that compassion part of being willing to be changed and being open to being changed as you're doing justice, as you're loving mercy. Because if you open yourself up to that, then you're going to see God and God and your community in new ways.
Yes. Yeah, and with that, I mean, it has to be like all the things. Because like love by itself is not justice. And justice by itself is not love. Mm-hmm. And so I think I'm wondering, as people are either passionate about justice or passionate about Jesus or trying to figure out the intersection of those, how do you grow in love with God and grow in love with God's people and ourselves as we do this kind of work? Because I think that at the end of the day, formation always comes down to the greatest commandments, to love God with our heart, soul, mind, and strength, to love our neighbors as ourselves, so to have that deep love for all three. And I guess I'm wondering for folks who are new to this, what are some steps that people can take toward experiencing the love of God in the unique ways that can only happen as we're formed in justice and compassion?
Yeah. I think that something that I've been thinking about a lot lately is how our orientation towards justice can often get so captivated within what we stand against.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens because you're reacting. Mm-hmm. Like this thing happens, you know, like George Floyd, like we are against police brutality.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, something happens with a queer person being with an ex-Benedict and it's, mm-hmm. we are against trans hate. And that is a necessary thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if we're thinking of justice as this formation, then the step that we have to take is then to imagine within that, what are we then for? What are we fighting for and what do we believe in? Yes. And so when we're talking about police brutality, we are for a world where everybody experiences safety,
yes,
and a collective safety that comes from each other. And when we talk about trans hate, we are for a world where every person is treated as if they are created in the way that God intended them to be created. God does not make mistakes, and every person experiences love and belonging. And that is what we are fighting for. And when we only orientate ourselves on what we're against, it becomes very hard to keep that going. And it becomes very hard to then also see the people that are involved and to have that compassion, because yes, you're just so motivated by anger. And I have been there.
Yes.
I mean, totally. I have certainly been there.
Yes.
And anger can sometimes, it gets stuff done.
Yes.
Like when you are driven by anger, it's a short fuse, but it is a powerful fuse.
Yes.
But at some point, if we want to continue to do this work and make it sustainable and to not just burn ourselves out at the end,
yes,
we have to move into that space of then thinking, what is the world that I imagine, and
yes,
what steps can I take in order to make that world a reality? And it doesn't always look like the big things we imagine when we talk about justice. It's not always going to a protest or a march.
Right.
And I love protests and marches, and people should continue to go if that's something that way that you choose to engage. But I do think, and as corny as it may sound, that justice is those everyday conversations that you have,
yeah,
with people.
Yeah.
It's those little things that you do to start, whether it's building a relationship with somebody who you have never been in community with,
mm-hmm,
or whether it's talking to your family members who might have some antiquated beliefs, and starting to just do the things that you can.
Yes.
But also justice is, if justice and love are interconnected, then it is just that community and being intentional and knowing that we can't do this in isolation and just cutting ourselves off from everybody.
Right.
Because we're like, oh, I'm just going to stay in these echo chambers.
Right.
In my opinion, just is not going to actually achieve the justice we want. Like, maybe we can get these little,
yeah,
communes where it's all great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there are seasons where you need those communes and you need to just be in a space where it's like, this is, I need here for healing. But for those of us that are able to go out and engage with people who are different than us or who believe differently than us, and I think that change often happens, and this is a very white evangelical way of seeing it, but sometimes relational change is necessary.
Absolutely.
And that having relationships, I know in my life, I think that there are people who have fundamentally been changed through just having a relationship with somebody that embodies an identity.
Yes.
And I will not speak for all queer people, but as like a queer person, I experience that to be true, that the people who can have some of the most queerphobic beliefs, those can be changed by relationship.
Yes.
And it's not always happen. It does not always happen. It's not always true, but it is a way. And so that's to me where like love, justice, and compassion all come into this intersecting,
yes,
world.
Yeah. And it speaks to some of just the idea that like the well-being of the individual is contingent on the system, but the well-being of the system is contingent on healthy and healed individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think sometimes when we're trying to fight white supremacy, we're like, everything is communal. And I'm like, yes, but like the communal to what end? If the communal well-being is not touching the individual, then it is a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there are some pieces like that that feel just like complicated if we're in justice spaces at all. And as we're trying to figure out spirituality, where the love for the individual that's in front of you is the thing that will most likely change you most to do the systemic work.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll go white in evangelical land, but I'm like thinking about that song Hosanna all the time, where it's like that the bridge of break my heart for what breaks yours,
mm-hmm,
everything I am for your kingdom's cause. And I don't think they're trying to be systemic in the writing of that song.
No.
It's show me how to love like you have loved me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it is this thing where it's okay, if my heart is broken as I interact with the image of God in someone else meeting mine, and I'm changed by that, then that is going to lead me toward doing Jesus-y stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to say I was a campus minister for almost 10 years, and I always used to say doing stuff does stuff, that as we are actively involved in practicing the way of Jesus, even if we don't believe it yet, we come to believe it by doing it. And I think that justice is the same thing, that we may not believe justice is possible, but as we pursue justice, we find, and compassion, we'll find that we are changed into people who want to and more naturally come to just and compassionate conclusions. And so I think at a place like Quest, where we can very easily virtue signal justice, mm-hmm, and compassion, I think I'm always asking like, okay, but how is that impacting your own life, your family, your friendships? how you know love for yourself and how you know God's own love for you. Because I think that sometimes just as communities like this can lose, like, God loves you. God loves me, and that love of God being known deeply in me is the thing that will motivate and be able to actually fuel the stuff that we want to see happen in the world.
Mm-hmm. And God doesn't just love you for what you do, right. Which I think can also, I've struggled with that in working in justice of, if I do the right things, if I do this, and people are going to experience who God is.
Yes.
And to make that shift of understanding, no, God is already there. I don't have to, like, and I know we sometimes say this in other contexts, but I don't have to bring God to the space. I don't have to bring God's justice right. to the space. God's justice is there. And if people can see that, embody that, and step into that. And I think that's also what makes doing justice as a Christian is we talk about hope a lot. And I think that, like you said, people don't always believe justice is possible. But for me, I'm always hinging on this idea that God promises this perfect kingdom mm-hmm. one day.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't like eschatology because I had some bad experiences growing right. up. But in some way, like, God's perfect justice will be made manifest on this earth.
Right.
And so if we can keep that sight in mind and to believe that that is going to be a reality in every yeah. the decisions that I make today or the decision my community makes today is just moving us an inch closer,
yes.
then that hope is motivating.
Well, yeah, and it sounds a lot like how Paul talks about the future, where he says we can see something through a veil now, but that will be made manifest in full later. And that our job right now isn't to say, well, we just have to make the full thing happen. I don't even think we have the imagination for what that mm-hmm. could be. I think our imaginations and our capacities are too small. But I do think that in our day-to-day, as we grow and are formed around justice and compassion, that what we're developing is an awareness of where God's presence is already, where God's presence is in other people and how that deserves to be dignified, where God's way or vision might be found in political and social systems. And it doesn't just have to be big. It's done as we learn to see God in nature and learn to value life in a really, really significant way, or learn to value listening and engaging and being present in all of our senses that we have available to us to know where God is already moving and present. And so I think that the move toward justice and compassion is a move toward being more human and more aware of God's presence around us and among us that is expanded and more manifest when we are living our lives tied to other people.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. said, the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And I think that that quote is true as Christians.
I sure hope so.
I hope so.
Well, Chloe, for folks who are new in this journey or just need like a blessing or some kind of word moving forward, if they're feeling stuck or if they're feeling like they just need more energy in a world that's constantly demanding our justice and compassionate energy, what is a blessing or a benediction you would give folks as we close?
I would say, may people find justice in the little things, in the big and in the big movements. People know that justice does not just look like what happens outside of their bodies, but also what happens inside of their bodies as they come to know God more. Because as you draw closer to God, you draw closer to what justice looks like, both internally and externally. May people know that you do not have to carry this burden alone, mm-hmm. that it is not all on you to solve every issue in this world, but that we join in collective communities because we cannot carry it on our own. And because we learn and we grow and we know from each other and we lean into each other. And that people just feel held. Mm. So often we care about justice because there are issues that affect us. And because, you know, we don't just do justice as an external way to deal with something, but as an internal way to heal the parts of ourselves that are broken. And so I hope that whoever's listening to this feels held in that space and to find the spaces when you can keep going and when you need to step back and recognize that this is a season where you need to work on that internal justice and for yourselves and reconciliation for yourselves. But ultimately, may you know that God's will be done.
May it be so. Thanks, Chloe.
Thank you.